to another episode of We the People Radio. Having some microphone drama here.
I know, I saw it.
Every time I pull it down, it goes flying up to the ceiling. And, yeah, it was a stunt made for not radio.
No.
So, my name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill, kind of.
Are you Bill?
Yeah,
today?
I am Bill today, Aaron. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They have everything you need when it comes to John Deere. Spring's right around the corner, so get in there and see them. They've got lots of tractors on hand, lots of mowers. If they don't have it, they can get it to you in short order. So go by and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call at 530-226-9226. Or go to the web at papemachinery.com. That's the interweb now.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from, but
I know.
Kind of bugs me. Yeah. Go to the interweb.
So he says it.
Yeah.
As opposed to the outer web. Oh, my goodness. So we've got Officer Joe and Kathy. I have trouble with my chair now. I've got a lot of problems with a lot of different things today. What? You want your sound turned up? Today is Hand Signal Day. Welcome to Hand Signal Day. It is the 19th of February, 2023, and I'm positive we will replay this program at some point in the future because, unfortunately, the topic isn't going away. Wouldn't it be great if it was, though?
Well, it would be great if people would just wake up and listen.
That's what I mean.
And take it seriously.
Yeah, and we could stop having it. So for all the people who think that the proliferation of marijuana and the cannabis joyride with tax revenue and CBD and hemp and blah, 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 that all goes with it, if you think it doesn't affect you, today's the day. Today's the day when you'll figure out that, hey, guess what? It could reach out and touch you at any minute. Just absolutely any minute.
Yeah, touch you hard.
So before I introduce Laura, got anything?
So, hi, Officer Joe.
Look at that.
Hey, we have successes to report, which is Susanville, California. And we stopped a pro-cannabis city council from turning that into what they wanted to make was the mecca of cannatourism for Northern California. And the citizens up there became active and stopped it and had a successful vote. And so there will be no commercial cannabis this year in Lassen County. In Siskiyou County, we had a meeting with the California Department of Health, three heads from the California Department of Health. I'd like to tell you that it went well. In that meeting was the assistant district attorney for Siskiyou County, their marijuana expert, their chief health officer, their chief code enforcement officer, the sheriff, and myself and a number of concerned citizens. And when the state arrived and saw that the county employees and myself were there, they refused to meet with us until we left the room. And Aaron, you were there as well, so you understand. And we all had to step out.
Yep. They felt like people from the congressman's office didn't need to be there either. You know, really nobody needed to be there.
So that's our
state. Don't need any witnesses to what's going on with the state of California.
So we're not stopping with them, Aaron. We're hot on them right now. So we're staying on the state.
Yeah. So, I mean, because people are told that this is going to be tax revenue
and
you know, improve the community and provide programs for kids or whatever, all other crazy stuff.
Well, and this is the misnomer to me is – any nonprofit that this is one of, you know, especially when you work with youth, why would I take money from marijuana tax dollars? Like, why? There is
sell drugs to help kids.
Yeah,
great idea.
Yeah, I'm like, it's stupid to even think that we would even do that. So.
Today we have Laura Stack, who is our friend and whom we support highly, and she's from Colorado, and she will report, and there is a report out of Colorado that shows for every $1 that a cannabis dispensary takes into a community, the community actually spends $4.50 in all the hidden costs in the lost work hours, the amount of people that have to go to the hospital for hyperemesis and emesis and all those kind of...
uncontrolled barfing, for those of you who don't. To speak hyper
yeah,
whatever it is.
Emesis, right. And for all the other problems, higher workman's compensation, losses, higher employee theft, higher worker sick out, if you can get people to even come to work anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the biggest issue is nobody wants to work.
Well, and if they do, they can't pass the drug test. So let's tell people, Laura, if you are unfamiliar with Johnny's Ambassadors and their founder, Laura Stack, she had flown 2 million miles all over the world as a time management expert and a best-selling author of 8 books until her world suddenly changed on November 20th, 2019, when her 19-year-old son, Johnny, died by suicide after he became psychotic from dabbing high THC marijuana concentrates. She responded by forming a nonprofit, Johnny's Ambassadors, to educate teens in schools all over the U.S. about the dangers of marijuana, on adolescent brain development, mental illness, and suicide. Johnny's story has been told in People Magazine, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, PBS, and on Dr. Phil. Laura's on a crusade to recruit thousands of Johnny's Ambassadors to get teens to stop dabbing.
1 in 7 are at risk in our own community for committing suicide. Our teens say that marijuana is the easiest drug to obtain, far easier than alcohol. 39% of our hospital admissions test positive for high-potency THC. 25% of our females, 15 to 24, use cannabis during their pregnancy, thereby stoning the unborn. They have less birth weight. They have lots of psychological problems later in life, and Laura's going to speak to that, and we are very fortunate to have her today.
Thanks for jumping on with us today, Laura. Where would you like to start?
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and echo everything you have said. And yes, we have shared that journey with you here in Colorado for the past 10 years. We legalized recreational marijuana the same year you all did. So
it seems like it kind of got off track for you guys faster than it did for us. Why? I don't know. Maybe we just heard more about your state, it seems.
Well, you know, it just, everything kind of went off the rails, I think. And forgive my voice, please. I did the 6 high school presentations in 2 days, so in Upper State New York. So I'm trying to recover from that. But, you know, I think we thought as voters, the more parents I talk with here in Colorado who are just stunned when I give, you know, presentations, let's say community nights or parent nights, you know, I always say, but you voted for this. You know, you kind of, don't you feel in some ways that, you know, we get what we deserve? And you know, many of them say, I had no idea this was what we were voting for.
Yeah.
You know,
I
was voting for what I thought I used when I was a teen in the 80s. You know, and that's not an excuse for me, but as way of explanation, you know, I used marijuana when I was 17 or 18. You know, it was like Jim's basement weed. And, you know, when Johnny told me, my son at 14, that he had used marijuana at a high school party, he had a friend whose brother was 18 at the time and had a medical marijuana card. And, you know, he said he used it. That's what I thought he meant. You know, I kind of put my perception, my experience of marijuana, which was, you know, roll it in a piece of paper, share it with your other 6 friends, giggle a little bit, and go get breakfast at Denny's. Like, that's my only recollection of using marijuana, and I didn't really like it, and I didn't use it after that. So I had no idea, no concept that this was even happening in the industry. I didn't know the weed was any different. I didn't know anything about dabbing and shatter wax, edible vapes. I didn't know any of that. So in my head, I kind of said, you know, well, it's just weed. You know, I used it. I'm fine. Didn't hurt me.
See, that's the bad part, because, yep, you know, don't you notice that the age group that thinks that, they're, yeah, all the people that are in elected office making the decisions.
They're people who are our age. They're, yep, not the, yep, kids. It's,
right,
like,
They don't have a clue.
And I really think Colorado, you know, when I talk to people, I'm giving a program tonight at a church for 100 people in a town down the street, and it's going to be the same thing. You know, I asked them, how many of you thought you were voting for this stuff? They're just on the ground, just shocked. And, you know, they don't take tours of dispensaries. They don't go in and take pictures of this stuff like I do. So, you know, I'll spend the rest of my life telling people that I was just so very wrong and ignorant. And really, I think we are doing our kids such a disservice, you know, sacrificing what we think are profits, which aren't, you know, on the altar of their public health. They're our kids. You know, we're going to lose generations of our teens to this stuff, sadly.
Well, and I don't think we're just losing the teens. I think adults that started young and have gotten into this, we're, you know, the suicides have just skyrocketed of people that you go, oh, my God.
They say, you know, I didn't even, this stuff is, oh, my gosh, this isn't the stuff we used to have. And why can't they have the stuff we used to have? You know, people who started using at my age, but then continued, you know, they complain. This stuff's like diesel fuel. It's narcotic strength. It's they don't even like it.
And that's what when we talk to youth, or especially when I talk to youth, I always say, let's compare this. You know, we're not starting out at beer. We're starting out at moonshine. So when you start using what's on the market today for pot or dabs or anything, you went straight to the moonshine. You didn't even slow down for a sip of beer. And
it's crazy. It's like the doctor saying, here, have a pack of cigarettes, smoke this and you'll feel better, and come back and see me in the morning. We're sending kids to use these drugs that is under this guise, this farce of
medicine, and
they're so confused about this. And
yeah,
it's like Coors Light. You know, we have Coors Light here in Colorado, 4.5 or whatever it is. Or, you know, just have a fifth of Everclear.
No
big deal.
And what could go wrong?
Yeah, so they really don't understand. And it's not just the potency. You know, it's explaining to people what the dose is. I think that's been one of the keys for us is, you know, they don't know what 1-3% THC back in the 60s looks like.
Nope.
Nobody understands that versus, you know, what is a 35% THC flower? Like, how much are you actually ingesting in terms of THC? I think, you know, when you show the math, we spend a lot of time doing math with teens when we speak at school assemblies. We talk a lot about science, a lot about math. They didn't know they were going to have to do that in a school assembly. But, you know, they realize, oh, my gosh, one dab today is equivalent to 50 Woodstock joints if you smoked them all by yourself.
Wow.
Like, putting it into perspective, how much is that? You know, how much am I actually getting? And it's shocking. I think we have to really lay it out in plain English for people to understand the difference.
Well, and then when you put it in edibles, how do you even track any of that?
Well, edibles, you explain.
You don't know what you're getting.
Well, you know, in Colorado, they try to define a serving size as 10 milligrams. So everything, which, you know, is the equivalent of two joints from when I was a kid. Now, what's 10 milligrams? What does that even mean?
A 10 milligram edible will, like, have you out.
Exactly. That, like,
here's our resident 19-year-old. No, thanks.
I hate the way weed makes me feel, which is whatever. Like, I have friends who do.
No, but you're exactly in the demographic.
My first experience with weed was some dispensary stuff, and I was I was out all night.
And that's legal stuff. Black market ditch weed, you know, laced with something bad weed. That's dispensary weed. Mm-hmm. You know, you legally bought an illegal dispensary. It's legal.
Well, if you ask any kid, like dispensary weed is like a thing. Like, it's insane. It's like super, it's potent. Like, everyone knows that, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
Laura, we interviewed Ann Hassel. Erin had her on the show.
She's so great.
She's great. And Ann said, you know, as a bud tender, she said, they told us anything less than 90% pure THC, we couldn't sell. So the dispensaries they don't want it. They don't want anything that's lower grade, which is why we think that it will never pass FDA approval. Not any kind of traditional FDA approval. I don't care who Biden puts in there and puts on the FDA to head the FDA. Unless they change the regulations completely, it can't pass.
Well, and I really believe these people don't want it legalized.
No.
Because they do not want to be under control.
Because right now, Laura, we can assume, but assuming is always bad. Here in California, they've got, the Cannabis Control Board, and, they're spending, who knows how many gazillions of dollars on, the Cannabis Control Board that does nothing. So when you have... when you have problems and you go to them, they bat their eyelashes at you and like, what?
We're
working on it. Actually, I don't even know if they tell us that. But in Colorado, same deal?
Well, it's the Marijuana Enforcement Division.
Oh, okay.
Conveniently called MED.
Yeah.
It's the fox in the hen house, just like it is there, marijuana industry people regulating the industry or lack of it.
Right.
There were, thousands of where they send in someone to audit the liquor store, but I think there were 32 total for last year audits. So,
in a whole state.
And this is, it's just the Wild West out here. This stuff is unabated, it's unregulated, it's untested. I mean, Vermont is the only state in the country that even is attempting to put a cap on this stuff, and they're even fighting that. And they're at 30% flower, 60% concentrate, which just makes me laugh. It's like, what kind of cap is that?
That's not going to keep it out of their state. I mean, my God, they're just going to bring it in. So,
well, I'm kind of the mind, I wish there was some kind of cap. I mean, anything's better. 60%'s got to be better than 90%, but then they just use more,
Well, and the thing is, so what? You set a cap. Who's going to go in and test it?
Right.
And is the MED going to do it? Of course they're not.
No.
Yeah. Your black market is just exploding in all these areas where they've legalized it. We have to take a really quick break, but we will come back with our guest, Laura Stack. She is with Johnny's Ambassadors. Everything is on the web at wethepeopleradio.us.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good.
Yes, bad medicine indeed. So we were chatting with Liam on the break, and he was saying that, once we started putting it in dispensaries, it just made it all much more...
accessible.
Yeah, accessible. Okay, so did it overtake... it was just where I lived, but when I was a kid in Connecticut, drinking age was 16. So we were all drinking it like 14 because it was really easy to get, beer and stuff. That was super simple. Mm-hmm. Once they legalized marijuana, did you see any switch there?
Me?
Yeah. Because you were in high school during that time period.
Yeah.
Junior high.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has an older sibling that has a med card, a green card. I don't even know if you need that anymore.
No.
No, you don't?
No.
See,
not unless you're under 21.
Okay.
Well, and that leads me to my next question, because Laura touched on it, and I want her to expand on it, which is, how are our youth getting this marijuana, and are they getting it through straw purchases, Laura?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, any high schooler in any of our schools, because I visit them, I mean, they can get marijuana in 5 minutes. I mean, everybody knows who the seniors are, who are 18, you know, who have their, quote, medical marijuana cards. We call them red cards here. But, you know, it's very well known. And I know this, sadly, because it happened to my son when he went to his first party at 14. And, you know, here it was legalized, same as there, 2012. And then it hit our dispensaries in 2014. I remember that because he was a freshman in high school and went to his first party. And, you know, we always had the same rules, you know, parents do, no drinking, no drugs, no smoking, no marijuana. And I just kind of assumed he would follow the rules. You know, I grew up in a day we were more afraid of our parents than we were of the police. Like, they, you know, they tell you that's the rule, and you know, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I just didn't think it was a question, you know. But he went to this party, and his friend had a brother who was 18, and he said, Mom, you know, Dad, there was a guy with a card, and all the boys wanted to try to get high, and I knew, you know, that I shouldn't do it, and I'm not supposed to, but I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know what to say. They handed it to me and said, hit this, and I did, and he felt guilty about it, and I told him, you know, don't ever do that again. It'll destroy that brain of yours. He had a perfect SAT score in math. He was a genius in math, 800 out of 800. And sadly, when he became 18, unbeknownst to us, without our permission or knowledge, he got a med card, and we only found out about it because after he died, we have a friend who is a cybersecurity expert who helped us get into his devices, and we found his login and all his information on the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, which is an oxymoron. And he, in his phone that we found in Snapchat, it just broke my heart, hundreds of photos of him dealing. And now here he is, full circle. You know, he got his first drugs from a dealer at 18, and now here he is. He's the dealer. And, you know, they call it the gray market. It's not the black market. They legally buy it, legal card, legal dispensary, legal drugs, and then they turn around and they sell it to their friends. There were hundreds of photos of all his wax and shatter and doubt, everything he was selling on Snapchat. And probably 13, 14-year-old boys. Just broke my heart. I don't know who they are or if they're okay. But, you know, it's really hard to get alcohol here. But it's very easy to get marijuana. You know, you only have to be 18. It's 21 for everything else. But, you know, they go to our pot shop docs, as we call them. And luckily, with the legislation we passed a year ago, 1317, regulating marijuana concentrates, this has been controlled somewhat because, you know, Johnny had no medical issues, zero. Perfectly healthy. Like, there was no condition that he had that would have been considered, you know, chronic and debilitating that would have warranted a medical card. You know, the kids here, the doctors give it to them, a few hundred bucks, you know, oh, I got a migraine, oh, I got a hangnail, my back hurts. Here, you need a med card for that. You know, and we had 6,000 18-year-olds in April of 2015, just a few years after that, with these med cards, and it's come down to now there's only 2,000. So we know our regulations are working. You know, we know that Colorado, you know, being one of the first to accept it, was the first to say, okay, this is bad, and we need to keep this out of the hands of our teens, because that's exactly what's happening, Cam. It's just, they were looping from one dispenser to the next, to the next, to the next, buying their maximum 40 grams. 40 grams!
Is that the regulations that were put into effect, was the amount they could buy?
Well, that's just a tiny piece of it, but yes, now 2 grams a day, and then now there's a tracking system where before it wasn't tracked. They just went, they could go to 10 dispensaries and buy the max, and then take it back and sell it, and now they can only get 2 a day, and it's tracked. And so we know that there's less marijuana in our schools, and so that's a huge win. You know, now we have to have 2 doctors who independently certify that the teen has a chronic and debilitating condition. They have to put their name on it. They're just not, they're not willing to do it anymore. They have to state what they're supposed to use, how much, how often, what the dose is. And no doctor is willing to do this. They also have to pull their medical health records and their mental health records. So we're seeing drastic cuts in youth use here just in the past year since it went into effect in January of 22. So it's a wonderful thing that's happened.
Well, let me talk about the difference that happened here, Laura.
Yeah, that's what I was curious. What's happening in California?
Well, we had pot docs showing up from San Francisco. I know of one who would fly up here. She would fly up here twice a week on her private plane, and she would see 50 patients in a day, and they would all get their marijuana card. And she made so much money at it that she was able to buy that private plane and transport herself up here. So our system isn't working like Colorado, and our dispensaries, you're supposed to have seed to sale where we're supposed to track everything. And I always point out the window, the front door of our Board of Supervisors, up toward the mountain and say, that's where the marijuana is coming from that's going in those dispensaries. And the dispensaries here have actually admitted that they have to take black market marijuana into their dispensaries to be, financially feasible for them in any way. I know that there's much more to the story. And by the way, you have a book, and I'd like you to talk about that too. And people should know that your book is an incredible journey into the psychosis that comes from illegal marijuana, but also the trail of tears that are left behind by the people that are affected by, in your case, the death of Johnny. Johnny was a beautiful human being, and I'd like you to talk a little bit more about him if you could.
Yeah, I mean, I always love to talk about Johnny. He was a wonderful person, and I always let people know right up front, you know, that he wasn't depressed, he wasn't anxious, he didn't have any mental illnesses, he wasn't trying to self-medicate. Everybody always jumps right to, you know, oh, poor kid, they're stressed, they're having mental health issues, they're medicating with marijuana. No, my kid was awesome. He had no problems until he started using marijuana, and then, you know, years later he became anxious and depressed and psychotic, but he was very involved in school. He ran cross country, ran track, he played the piano, he played the guitar, he was very engaged, had a ton of friends, great sense of humor, a wonderful smile. He was just such a handsome young man and warm and caring, a loyal friend. He had a lot of friends. We were a Christian family. He was raised in the church. He loved Jesus. We taught Sunday school for many years. We have an older daughter and a younger son, and the five of us taught a four-year-old class, and he loved kids. He was great with kids, and you know, grew up in Bible Blast and youth group and Awanas and all those programs, and was so smart, had a 4.0 GPA, loved school, and had a scholarship to Colorado State University. You know, he could have done anything he wanted with his life. And when I do school assemblies, I show the kids a video of him, 1 minute video, like a montage of his life, you know, from younger to his death, so they can just see, wow, God, you know, he's just like me. He's just a great kid. He's just a normal kid, and it can happen to anybody. And you know, people just say, how can that happen to you, Laura? How can that happen to your son? It's like, well, you know, why am I so special? It can happen to anybody. You give them marijuana, it changes them. And
you weren't a helicopter mom. You were fully invested in Johnny's life. I know, because I read that in your book. You know,
I mean, well, we spent over $200,000 trying to help him. There was no Johnny's ambassadors when I was having problems with Johnny. There was nowhere to turn. Insurance didn't think it was addictive. You know, they didn't want to pay for anything. There were no treatment programs. The ones we tried were a disaster. They put him in one program with, you know, other all ages drug users, and they mocked him and they made fun of him. Here he's this 18-year-old kid addicted to marijuana, and they're like, I'm a heroin user and you're weak-minded. And he cried. I mean, it was terrible. They didn't have any help for him. There was a program in one center that said, well, you need to lie. You need to say that you're hooked on LSD, and then they'll pay for it.
Wow.
It's like, what? He goes, I'm not going to say I'm hooked on LSD. You know, I'm addicted to marijuana. And when he stopped using, he would recover. He would be sober for 3 and 4 months at a time. And we always used to say it was like an alien came and took Johnny and then put another kid there. And he became verbally abusive and defiant and isolated himself in his room. He withdrew from all activities that he loved. He stopped going to school. He got 4 D's his senior year, his last semester. And this was a kid, you know, who never got a B in his life. And still graduated with honors, 3.2, because his GPA was so high. He was just such a wonderful person, and it took 5 years from that fateful party to his death. And Johnny, unfortunately, became one of those that got very suspicious and very paranoid. It doesn't happen to everybody, but it increases your odds fivefold when you use this high-potency crap that you start to experience really delusional thinking, and he thought people were after him and that people were watching him and that everybody knew about him, and he became incredibly paranoid that the mob was going to get him and that the FBI, he was on the FBI list and that his phone was bugged. I mean, he would just say the most outrageous things, and we, what are you talking about? And we still didn't understand until pretty close to the end, about a year and a half before he died, that it was the marijuana that was doing it. We went and got him genomine tested. We thought, oh, my God, he's developing some kind of, like, schizophrenia. And we don't have anything like that in our genes, in any side of our families. Several generations back, we didn't know what. He didn't have any markers, didn't test for anything, COMT gene, ATK1 gene, all these, nothing. And so the mental hospital, they diagnosed him with, his diagnosis was THC abuse severe. That's what was wrong with him.
And Laura, I know from reading your book and from talking to you, because you're my friend, I know that, and by the way, I'm honored to be your friend. I know
Me
that,
too. Thanks, Cam.
Yeah. I know that you tried every single technique, every single parental technique that's ever possible in the gamut of techniques, including tough love. I know there was an incident with a family dog. Maybe you could speak to some of that so that the families that are out there in our community that are listening to this.
Hold on before we start that. Let's take a quick break and come back so we don't have to interrupt.
Okay.
Because I think that is a huge thing. Because, you know, a lot of times people want to think that the parents aren't involved.
I only got time for a couple of beers and a jukebox song ringing in my ear. The next thing you know, the bartender's pouring, shots are flowing, got me stoning. All I really know is that I should be going, but I'm soaking up the moment. I'm all jacked up, all jacked up. Don't believe I've ever had this much. One thing I've learned, when you get tore up, time sure flies when you're all jacked. Well, let me get to the point. Let's roll another joint and turn the radio to laugh. I'm too alone to be proud, and you don't know how it feels. You don't know how it feels to be me.
Yeah.
So are we back with Laura?
Yep.
Laura, before I let you go again and tell the story of Johnny, I do want to just illuminate that there are numerous suicide hotlines, and we'll give out one if anyone needs help in the community. And you can dial nationally 988. And I believe Aaron said that you can also use 211 in our local area, and help is available. And there is a California-based prevention program for people that they can get help, and parents can get help, and it's called Maranon, and So that's a friend run by a friend of Laura's and mine and Kathy's and Aaron's, a man named Bart Bright. And there's thousands of families here in California that use that service. It's like Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the same program, but it's specifically for marijuana. So
excellent.
Back to you and your beautiful son. I know you tried Tough Love at one point. That's in your book. And what's the name of your book again, Laura? Could you tell us?
Yes, you're right. And you've probably seen it all, Officer Joe, in your line of work also. But, you know, you get to the point as a parent where, you know, you can't figure out, you know, is this normal teen stuff? Because teen boys are irritable anyway, and they sleep a lot anyway. And, you know, you're trying to separate what is drug use and what is just a normal teen stuff. But, you know, at some point, you realize it's just it's not normal stuff, and it's part of what, you know, we discovered was drugs. After he got his med card at 18, he was just out of control. He was still in high school, and, you know, we had our younger son at home still, and so this was a very volatile environment. He became abusive. And he would say horrible things to me, and I, you know, loved him more than anyone in the world. And he was, you know, saying just horrible, foul things, you know, right in front of his brother. And my husband's a second-degree black belt, so this was not going over very well. And he stopped going to school. He refused to do any chores. He would vape his THC, his pen, his dab pen. He was fond of wax and vape oil, and he would do that in the house. And so, you know, he just was out of control, and he had a therapist, you know, had a program. He was in counseling. You know, we were trying all of that, and we didn't quite know what to do, but then he decided for us at 18, he said, well, I'm leaving. I'm 18, and I'll use marijuana if I want to. You can't stop me, and I don't have to go to school because I'm an adult. And he took us off of his parent portal. He took us off of his therapist consent, off of the university. When he, you know, got to the university at CSU, we couldn't get any information. Couldn't talk to the psychiatrist. You know, he just totally put us out of his life. And when he said, I'm leaving, we didn't argue. You know, I think that was the ultimate in tough love. It was it had been 4 years at that point of hell, basically, trying to get him help and over this addiction. And, you know, at some point we realized you can't control another human being. You know, he needs to want help, and he didn't. You know, he said he loved marijuana and that he was going to use it for the rest of his life. And, well, he did. And so we let him leave. And he took $5,000 that he had saved of his own money in his own savings account that he was supposed to take to college, that he'd earned in jobs and, you know, presents allowance, everything in his life. And we didn't know this. But, you know, we found out later after he died, that he had bought all kinds of legal dispensary products with it, and someone stole his stash. So he was all of a sudden out of money. We weren't paying for him to rent the bedroom in the house that he was renting. We paid for his insurance for his car so he could get to school, and his phone so we could talk to him. And that was it. And he didn't have any money, and he didn't have any drugs. And so he came over when we were gone one evening, and our son James was here by himself, and he was a senior in high school at the time. And he said, I want to see the dog. And she came to the door, Lily, my dog, and he called her and took her. And he called, he texted my husband that evening, and he said, you need to give me money to pay for my rent, or I'm going to kill the dog. And I mean, we had no doubt that he actually would. I mean, he was that volatile. We had locks on our bedroom doors by this point. You know, all the knives hidden. He got into a physical altercation with my younger son, who is bigger than him. My younger son's more of an athlete type versus a brainiac. And so we didn't doubt that he probably would kill my dog. And so I did. I caved. I went and I gave the homeowner his rent for the month, $800. And he gave me the dog back. And it's that. And that's just one of, I mean, just countless. Yeah, the book was 300 pages, as you know, Joe. It's, you know, just recounting everything that happened. He died right before Thanksgiving of 2019, and then it was COVID. You know, you all remember that coming about early 2020, and we were isolated and we were alone, and it was just, it was awful. You know, I was basically in a fetal position for about 6 months, just my failure, just inability to save my son. And so I just started writing, you know, because, well, I didn't have anything else to do with COVID. And 300 pages, his story. I was worried that I was going to forget everything that had happened. And it's pretty gripping.
In your book, Laura,
it's pretty graphic.
I have written on the first page, it says, on the first page of your book, I wrote to myself, I said, I will never forget, Laura. And that book is The Dangerous Truth About Today's Marijuana by you.
Yeah.
And it is an absolutely gripping story. I know that you've told me more, and I think about death notifications I've had to do as a policeman in my life. And, you know, you kind of divorce yourself. But I wonder about the policeman that came to your house that night. Could you describe that to me and what happened?
Yeah, it's funny because that officer, actually, I am in touch with because I spoke at a school here where we are in Douglas County, Colorado, and there was a school resource officer there who said, you know, that's the best presentation I've ever seen on marijuana, and he introduced me to the chief, who introduced me to the sergeant there who was in charge of all the school resource officers, and so I ended up going and doing a train-the-trainer to teach them my materials, just like you have, Joe, to go and teach in their schools. And that officer was there. And so it was very emotional, you know, at the meeting. He told his story, and I told mine, you know, and to see where those two worlds align was just, it's just heartbreaking. You know, he was the first one on the scene. He was at the door, and it was late. We'd gone to bed at, I don't know, 10:30, something like that, and about 1 o'clock, my cell phone rang, and I thought it would be Johnny. It always was. I kept my cell phone up on high because he'd be in some sort of trouble, and instead it said Douglas County Sheriff's Office, and I answered, and I said, do you have Johnny with you? And he said, no, ma'am, I'm sorry, I don't. And it just hit me, and I just felt just this cold chill go through me, and I just knew something was very, very wrong. And I woke up my husband, and we ran downstairs, and there was a woman there in black and a Douglas County sheriff's officer, the one I met. And we just kind of instinctively let them in and just sat down knowing there's something very wrong. And we just said, what happened? You know, is he okay? And the woman in black said, Mr. and Mrs. Stack, I'm with the coroner's office, and I'm so sorry to tell you that your son is deceased. And we just couldn't even believe it. I said, what do you mean? I mean, that's what a question, right? Your son is deceased. That was my first question. What do you mean? I was just very confused by this. And she said, he's dead, ma'am. He jumped off the top of the RTD parking garage in Lone Tree, just a couple miles from where we live. And it's just the worst day of my life. You know, I still picture that day. We never thought, you know, that he would do it. He did have one prior suicide attempt. He tried to kill himself about 14 months before that here in our house, and he was unsuccessful, but he had told me he was going to kill himself, and I guess I just kind of thought that he would tell me again, and he didn't. He took his life, and then 3 days later, we found a journal in his apartment that he had written in, and it said, "The mob is after me, and the FBI is after me. Everybody knows about me," and I could just see all the delusional ranting in his brain. So we don't know. I mean, we'll never really know what he was thinking or why. But clearly, he had some sort of psychotic episode and some sort of attack. There's a video of him. They asked me if I wanted to see it. We said no, of course. But the camera at the parking garage caught him dying, killing himself, and it showed him as if he thought he could fly, like with the posture and the mannerism of someone that thinks they can just take off from the side of a building and fly. And so some people looked at that and they said, you know, clearly that maybe he thought that he was magic, that he could fly and that maybe he wouldn't die. So, yeah, just it ruined his mind. And it took his life. I am 100% sure if he hadn't used marijuana that day that he would still be here. He was a great kid. He made some bad choices, including using marijuana. And he got addicted to it. But, you know, he's a victim. He should have never had access to this stuff in the first place.
I have to make a comment here, too. Just like cigarettes, you know, we went after the tobacco companies. Just like alcohol, we go after the bars that overserve somebody. But why? I just don't understand this. Why we're not going after the dispensaries and the dealers?
Well, it's legal.
Well, I know, but so is alcohol. So is cigarettes.
Well,
those are all legal.
The Colorado Constitution changed the law. It's in our Constitution that, you know, they have a legal right to purchase this stuff. I talked to several attorneys. They said he had a legal card. He bought legal weed. He bought it in a legal dispensary. No rules were broken. The dispensaries, you know, were within their right to sell him this stuff. And I'm like, why can we even make this poison? How can we even create 80%
right.
wax? And,
right.
you know, you can't even have Juul's flavored e-cigarettes, but you can have...
Yeah, we're worried about that as a gateway.
Yeah,
as
and we
a
can have 90% potency vape. I did try. Attorney would take it.
We're going to get slammed here by the news, Laura. We're going to come back with you. You have 5 minutes to grab some coffee and stuff. We will be right back. Our guest is Laura Stack. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.